Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hi, everybody. This is Lou Nash.
And this is Ella Gordon-Letty.
And together, we welcome you to the redesign of everything.
Where we will be talking to the global change makers, the designers, and the practitioners who are helping to redesign a better future for us all. We'll be giving you not only the inspiration, but also the tools to redesign your world for the better.
Design is the single most important force in building a thriving future for us all. A future that's more regenerative, more resilient, and more circular by design. So let's share these stories and insights gleaned from our guests at the front line of this transformation.
Thank you for being here and for listening, because together we really can redesign everything.
Kia ora, everyone. I'm thrilled you can join me here today on the redesign of everything. Joining us in the studio is Michaela Plore, the Executive Director of Organisational Development and Sustainability for Profile Group. She is leading the change here in Aotearoa towards a circular economy for the aluminium window and door industry. And she is here today talking with us about the redesign of everything. Welcome, Michaela.
Hi, Lou. Thank you so much.
Great to have you here. I'm also really thrilled to introduce you listeners to Samantha Walmsley-Bartlett, who is our lead environmental strategist at Circularity. Sam's going to be joining me asking Michaela the hard, tough questions, sharing the work that we've done together. Sam will be my co-host, as I mentioned, for what I know will be a really informative conversation for many of you who are embarking on your own journeys of transformation in your organisations. So welcome, Sam. Thrilled you could be here today.
Yeah, kia ora, Lou, and welcome, Michaela.
Great to be here.
Awesome. I've actually known Michaela for some time. I first met her at a Sustainable Coastlines event, and we shared a commitment to reduce the environmental impact of business as usual. Michaela is really passionate about all things ocean and land health and has a background in international environmental law. And she's found herself now immersed in the waste-to-landfill reduction and implementing circular principles with her family's aluminium, glass and componentry manufacturing business, Profile Group. Profile Group represents a family of businesses that together form New Zealand's only integrated aluminium supply chain for windows and door solutions. And the aim for Michaela is for their group of companies to contribute nearly nothing to landfill through the manufacturing and installation process, with all materials kept in flow and at high value. Sounds like some good circular principles there, Michaela. Now, there really is so much work to share about the transformation that Michaela has been on with Profile Group. But just to name a few, Profile has recently built a world-leading energy-efficient eco-industrial park, which was awarded a 5 Green Star New Zealand Version 3 industrial design rating by the New Zealand Green Building Council in 2021. It's right in the heart of Waikato in Hautapu, just 5 kilometres down the road from where the journey began 50 years ago. Profile Group's partnership with Sanctuary Mountain enabled a New Zealand first with the first issue and purchase of biodiversity units through the newly minted ECOS Sustainable Development Units program, a welcome alternative to carbon credits. And together they've planted almost 1 million native trees at Takapo Estate in Waikato, with an additional 30,000 trees planted in staff restoration projects. Michaela and Profile Group partnered with Live Ocean to study the effects of environmental threats and to get behind the important work they support to restore and protect life in our oceans through science, outreach and innovation. And in partnership with Circularity, they have designed out the need for single-use plastics in packaging with a regenerative, reusable solution. And we're going to really dig into that later on in our call. But every aspect of Profile's 50-year-plus strategy is made with the utmost consideration towards ecology restoration, energy efficiency, material usage, and long-term impact. And these are in line with the principles of the circular economy. Their ambition is to continue to find ways to keep materials in use and at the highest value, design out waste and pollution, and regenerate natural environments. So I'm absolutely thrilled to have you here today, Michaela, because we know that this is an industry that faces some really big challenges. The listeners might know that by 2025, 1 billion houses are needed worldwide. Construction materials and the building sector are responsible for more than one third of global resource consumption, and it's generally done in a linear, extractive, take-make-waste way. Here in New Zealand, our current capacity for recovery and recycling fails to match the current rates of consumption, with construction and demolition waste contributing up to 50% of our total waste to landfill. Each home constructed generates an average of 4 tonnes of waste. And it's not just about waste. The way we use materials and produce our goods accounts for 45% of global greenhouse gas emissions. So how we make and use materials in construction and building really matters. So this is very, very important work Michaela and the team are doing. So at the start of each interview, we like to ask our guests, Michaela, what actually does the redesign of everything mean for you?
Such a great question, Lou, and I've put a lot of thought into this. It's a big question, actually. But ultimately, I'd really like the world to do a stock take on all of the materials that we have available to us today and understand how we can repurpose what we already have rather than relying on virgin material all the time for all products and manufacturing. So, yeah, stock take. Let's stop sending things to landfill. Let's stop wasting really high-value materials, and let's either make them into something else as useful or pull it apart and make it back into what it was originally manufactured for.
Awesome. I really, really like that answer, Michaela, because it really asks us to think about what we already have and to value what we already have rather than searching for the new thing that has to come out of our earth in an extractive manner. So I think that's a really important response to how we redesign everything. I'd love to start a little bit further back in your journey, though, if we could, Michaela, and really situate ourselves in your role as a lead for sustainability in a large organisation. Previously, in my role as a sustainability manager, I really felt that there was not many of us. and, you know, when we think about 10 years ago in Aotearoa, there are only a dozen or so people who had the role of a corporate responsibility or sustainability lead in an organisation, and it was really a nice to have. But we know that this is changing, and in the past few years, the number of sustainability roles has increased and grown in both prominence and influence. And many of our leading companies are starting to commit serious resource and authority to them, with sustainability managers increasingly at the heart of business operations, strategy, and stakeholder relations. And they're becoming more senior and influent either on the C-suite or reporting to it. But in the words of Spider-Man, with great power comes great responsibility. And there's a lot of change to be made in the way that we conduct our business to get us to that radical redesign that you mentioned. According to the last sustainability professional report in Aotearoa, this year, 42% of people believe their company is not doing enough to address environmental problems, and 91% believe there is not yet enough capability within their organisations to address future sustainability topics. So I'd love to know if you could tell us a little bit about your journey from where you started out to where you are today as Executive Director of Organisational Development and Sustainability for Profile Group. What were some of the pivotal moments that led you to your role as a Director of Sustainability?
So a pivotal moment for me was actually meeting Lou at the Sustainable Coastlines event that she mentioned. I knew we had big problems in our organisation, and I just didn't really know where to begin. I think we started making lots of little changes in different areas of the business, but we didn't really know how to measure the success or understand if, you know, the solution that we put in place was actually the right one. So I think having Lou and the team at Circularity come in and just really sort of map our system, draw a line in the sand and understand exactly, you know, what materials are coming into our business and why. And then you can actually put solutions in place that are long-term. So just having that support and the knowledge around, you know, the circular economy and how we could make the systems across our group circular, you know, that was the starting point. We were kind of just floundering, and now we've got a plan, goals, structure, measurability, and you can actually just get traction so much faster.
Yeah, great answer. And thanks for the shout out, Michaela. It was a pivotal moment for me too.
Cool.
I want to just ask you about this kind of map the system session that we did. And for those that have followed this case study, and we'll put it in the show notes, but there's some pretty good photos of Michaela and I mapping out the entire business on in a room just up the road in Ponsonby, one of those rooms that every room is a whiteboard. And thankfully, at the time, we were working out of this space that had such a room, because I've never been in a room since. And so we had enough space to kind of put an entire business and supply chain on there. But I know for a lot of organizations, they don't start with a map the system exercise. They start with a measurement or reporting. But actually, our journey together started with mapping. And so I'm really interested to know or hear from you, Michaela, you know, what that did and why that was different and what that unlocked for you, and then how measurement kind of came later and supported that.
Sure. So as you mentioned at the beginning, Lou, we are a fully integrated supply chain. And how that works is there's 9 businesses that make up our group, and they essentially are all contributing toward APL Window Solutions, their final product. But when you get different businesses within a group with different management, whether it's GM, CEOs running different operations, you end up with a bit of a silo approach. So we'd probably never mapped the system as one. And so you really start to see from a procurement perspective that we were using different suppliers, for example, and we had different waste management collectors, and each business was really working in that silo effect. So all of a sudden, you've got a picture of what the whole group does. You then know, in our case, how big our problems were and how, you know, that we really needed to get on to fixing those.
And it would take every one of those businesses.
Correct.
And leaders with you on that journey.
Yeah.
Right?
You need the buy-in from everybody, which I have to say hasn't been difficult. Management is amazing in our group. They're really, really on board. But if you're not working toward mutual goals, whether that is mutual reduction goals, even considering when you're buying new plant and equipment, energy efficiency, all of that type of thing, you really just need that sort of that constant North Star to come back to what we're working toward collectively.
I think for me, one of the big aha moments when we mapped your system, apart from like the sheer scale, and we did have a little bit of a joke about how many businesses we could put, and thank goodness we had 4 walls, which was really great. But, you know, credit to your family for creating that integrated supply chain. And we've got a number of them in New Zealand, right?
Yeah, it's awesome.
We've got a legacy of businesses that can do that, because we've had to. We're this far away from some of those big markets. Mm. But one of the most amazing things for me, because obviously we were at the heart of it, the problem that we were looking at was the scale of packaging waste, right? And when we started mapping it from sourcing all the way through to how it was used in the manufacturing process, we identified that there was a lot of packaging waste actually that sat within the supply chain as things got moved between businesses, right? And there was a whole nother part that we needed to have a look at, not just at when it turned up at your fabricator's end or when it turned up at the site to be built. Those hidden waste streams within the supply chain, without a visibility, it was quite hard to see those. But the other one that was I just loved is we went all the way through it and we were listing out all these different packaging types used at different stages. And then we got to the end and the aluminium window and door was delivered to the site in a blanket.
Yeah. Yes.
And it was like, I loved it, because so often when we talk about the circular economy, we talk about the things we used to do, you know, when there was no single-use packaging. And I was like, yay, it still survived at the very end of the process. But it created a trigger for us, didn't it?
Totally. Yeah. We're all of a sudden able to look back and go, why do we use 7 different materials to send a case of extrusion? And I think understanding that why really helps you to design the problem out, right? And see how we could potentially adopt the blanket scenario with other product and componentry going out the door.
I think what's so amazing about that process, Michaela, is just the significance and just the scale of what you're talking about here, you know, mentioning 7 different types of packaging materials, all which get used and then lost before you get to the end of your, even your system, let alone, you know, what happens following as those are actually installed into buildings. And what it kind of makes me reflect on is just when we start to unpack the scale of impacts within our businesses and within our systems and how we might shift those, we are increasingly aware that sustainability just isn't and never was enough. And so when we're looking at starting to solve this, we're thinking about how do we create circular, low carbon and regenerative systems and business models. And there's a really compelling business case for making a change into the circular economy because we know that it could generate $4.5 trillion of additional global economic output by 2030. But like we said, it's a significant challenge and it's a significant scale. And once you start to look at how you make that shift, it's not always easy. There are a number of challenges that present themselves to you as individuals, as a business, as an organization and within our communities. And often that first one is understanding the problem, and you've started to talk a little bit about how you did that with mapping the system with circularity. But I'm really interested in to how you went about the process of starting to solve that packaging challenge and what the role of collaboration was for you to move through those challenges.
Yeah, cool. Just one thing on the packaging piece that I think is the thing that catches people up the most. You just mentioned there about the $4.5 trillion worth of, you know, economical upside if we do make changes to the way that we live with and use materials. But that's the biggest thing for most businesses, right? They see sustainability initiatives as a big cost. Just by removing single-use packaging out of our system, and obviously we've got a logistics business, so we have that capability for reverse logistics. But to allow packaging to go round and round and round in circles is a massive cost saving. You know, that's huge off our bottom line anyway. So when you start to talk about the volume that we have to bring in for single use versus that same amount of volume round and round and round and round in circles, it's unbelievable. So it's just a really important point because I always hear that, oh, well, it's going to cost us so much. Which is in the long run not correct. I don't believe.
It really isn't. It really isn't true. No. I think we've just never put together. I mean, it did take us a little while with your group of companies, but we got there. We put together the cost of all the single-use packaging,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Just added up and got everyone to put it in. And there was not, because there's not one supplier, there's not one organisation or one person over that.
Yeah.
And once we worked out that cost, being able to make the shift to something reusable was just a no-brainer.
Totally. And when you do realise that cost, I think management and boards understand how much money there is to be saved. And actually that money saved should go toward the budget for further sustainability initiatives. So, you know, that brings you back to that collaboration piece. In order to make change quicker and more effective in your businesses, you really need to go out to the experts who are doing this stuff day in and day out and find consultants, talk to people who are doing work in this space, pay for the collaboration opportunity with that extra budget that you found in your business that you didn't know that you had or that extra money that can be recovered. I think it's just so important that boards, CEOs, senior management across different businesses really start to put some money toward this in their own businesses, not only for the greater good, but because, you know, there's savings to be made in getting rid of single use.
Mm. And I think we often see the budgets go to replacements or solutions, but it is actually quite a linear way of looking at it because what we like to see is investment going towards understanding it better. And then once you start to understand it better, then those solutions become purpose fit, right? We see a lot of shifts happening in packaging from this one thing to the other thing. And we did do a bit of work together around that. We were like, you know, this current material doesn't have an end of life solution. Let's swap it out for something that might. But you get yourself into a bit of a spin when you're looking at it like that, right? And you definitely don't get the cost savings. Mm. You generally get a cost increase. Mm. Oh, we were buying something that was really low cost, high volume, and now we're no longer doing that. We're buying something very, you know, that's new, that hasn't been fully tested. It's quite expensive and it still doesn't have an end of life.
Mm.
So I think that ability to step back and go, actually, in your case and in your business, Michaela, with Profile Group, why does aluminium need to be wrapped? Where at the moments in the supply chain does it need to be protected? And what's driving that? You know, and I think, you know, I definitely came into it not an expert in aluminium, and I still am not an expert in aluminium, but I know how important it is for your business to have that wrapped and delivered to your end customers to go in their homes forever.
Mm.
Right?
Yeah. No, yeah, quality and and service has always been our, you know, two driving factors. But the reality is that with the materials that we've began trialing, we can get the product there in perfect condition, no difference at all. Other challenges come out the other end, particularly for us around and how I can use wool as the one of the packaging types that we tried. It will end up in our fabricators' yards or on site at their factories, and potentially, you know, sit outside for 4 weeks or 6 weeks before that case of aluminium is actually unpacked. So you do come up against some other problems that you don't necessarily foresee. And when you're doing the theory of a circular system, whereby if you've had wool sitting outside for 6 weeks, you know, is it going to be all soggy and heavy? And then utilising reverse logistics, if we're to get that back, you know, what material are you then dealing with? We then have to put more resource into our business to sort that, to dry that potentially, to get that back to the packing team. So trial is so key in making sure that these systems actually work in real life. But I think perseverance is quite key in that, and you can find solutions, right? So now we're looking into big bins on wheels with lids once the unpacking team and our fabricator businesses have unpacked a case of aluminium, sorted the materials. If they've got no room inside on their factories, they can wheel that bin outside, put the lid down to keep it, you know, protected or dry or easier for us to handle. Then we can collect that and bring that back to kind of a centralised space. We can consolidate all the materials and then get them back to the various packing teams. So you always sort of find the next solution, but you've got to trial these systems.
Yeah, and I definitely, that became really key, and that's what we've been so thrilled to work with you on, is not only thinking how you might design out enough single-use plastic in your system, which I think, what, wrapped a third of the planet per annum? Mm. You know, a quarter yeah. of the planet per annum.
Yeah.
Big difference, still big number, right?
Yeah, no, totally.
So wrapping a quarter...
Terrific number.
Yeah. Wrapping a quarter of the planet per annum in single-use plastic from a group of businesses in the Waikato region, to hopefully diverting that to a reusable product that can keep going through the system. But it requires system design. And I guess, listeners, it's what you were hearing from Michaela, those testings and those learnings she was doing through that system, how she gets it back, what are the challenges of it, and solving it. It's not a like for like. You've got to do the work, and having prototyping and testing in there is really key.
I wonder, Michaela, if you maybe want to take us through, when you think about that full system, what are we envisioning here? What's a system that you've designed to solve that a quarter of the planet wrapped in plastic worth of plastic that you were needing to transport your materials? What's that new solution look like, and what's some of the impacts that you've achieved through that?
Yeah, so we have actually gone back to one of our suppliers, to see if they'll do any take back. This is sort of the short term. You know, we needed to deal with this problem right now. Yeah. I didn't have time in my mind to sort of trial all of the various alternate materials that we could use. So we send a lot of our soft plastics back to our supplier. It gets repalletized and then sent to PPL, our plastics business. They can then make that into other products. And once that product is in our system, if it were to break, we can get it back, grind it back down and start again. So that plastic should never end up in landfill. If that's within our group of businesses, we can get that back. So that was short term. And then medium, and we hope long term, was, you know, exploring the options with wool through your contacts, Lou. We looked at the blankets to replace the plastic and to replace the foam interleaving. What we found was we were getting a lot less extrusion in a case, just because, you know, the wool is thicker. So you're constantly coming up with these kind of problems that you need a bit of innovation to solve. We also introduced a recycled paper probably, you know, still not best practice in my mind, or not better practice, as I like to call it, because ultimately you still have to get that back to somebody to recycle. We can't reuse the paper. The links of aluminium go through it, rips holes, it's not right. But we just wanted to find those quick solutions to phase it out. We even started working with our powder coat supplier to understand if there was a better, more durable powder that isn't so prone to scratching or marring, which is what happens when aluminium rubs on one another in transit. You get those scratches through the powder coat. So there's a lot of innovation happening in that space. You know, that kind of brings you back to that collaboration piece. And they've looked at product that is a lot more matte and a lot more textured. So really difficult to scratch, essentially. So if we can use that for all of our extrusion, then the amount of packaging required just reduces significantly. So success for us has been talking with our suppliers as well, our business partners, going, how can we make change within our own organisation, what we're doing, that niche bit, for bigger change?
Yeah, I love that. It really is a system effort, and suppliers are really a part of that. And it's also, when we think about it, it's the partners at the who we're sourcing materials from, but also who might able to support us to recover those materials as well. And in a circular economy, both are equally important. And it's a lens that often gets missed. It's about where materials are flowing from, but also where they're going to, and how you design a system that enables the circularity at both ends, really, so that you truly are closing the loop. And what I love about the work that Profile Group have done has been the validation of how you might increase the circularity of your packaging system. And Profile Group were the first business in Aotearoa to comprehensively measure and value the circularity of your material flows across not only packaging, but also your products, energy, and water use, using the Circular Transition Indicator tool, which is often called CTI. And CTI was created by the World Business Council for Sustainable Development to help create baselines and enable decision-making around how businesses might increase the circularity of their products or services or business models. And through the packaging system that you've designed, that returnable and reusable system for packaging materials, we know that you were able to increase your circularity from a baseline of 64% to a goal of 90% once the system is in place and you've been able to work through all the trial and rollout with your network of fabricators. I'd love to know a little bit about what made you decide to work with Circularity to use the Circular Transition Indicator tool, and what it's really enabled you to do as part of the shift.
I think because we are so big as a group in terms of the different business units, it was really hard to manage what you can't measure. I really needed a tool that put all the information in a consolidated place, that in time, once it's really well established, that each business can use, that there's sort of live data for them. It's also been really great in terms of understanding whether an initiative will be successful. So you can really test it in that CTI tool. I sort of mentioned before that we came a little bit unstuck with the wool blankets to replace the plastic and the foam interleaving because they were too thick. So we're sort of thinking, okay, so what other materials can we use? Somebody had the idea in the business around using recycled cotton. So it's sort of that thin sheet, but the tool became really valuable because then you can actually test to see what that does to your circularity score. So, you know, the platform itself asks for the data around that material. You input that in and it will tell you that actually that takes your score to X percentage. So before you even begin trialing it, you can actually know whether it's the right option or not, whether to spend any time or put any resource into it, or actually go, hey, yep, in theory, that sounded great, but when it comes to the circular economy and the circular system, this material actually isn't going to do the trick. It's, you know, it's not renewable enough. It's the end of life isn't great for that material. Mm-hmm. So that was really fantastic. The other really important piece actually was the energy part of that tool. So when we had to input, you know, the amount of energy that we, or electricity that we use as a group of businesses, hey, I knew it was high. I've always known that we were the second largest user in the Waikato, and that has bothered me, to be honest, but I didn't really know how extreme that was. So, you know, another thing that the tool kind of led us to do was understand how we can, A, reduce our energy consumption, but also, you know, what other opportunities were there. So we managed to secure ownership in a hydro station down in the South Island. And we have now been able to 100% offset our energy consumption with renewable energy from a hydro dam. So that's been another real moment of celebration for us, actually. It's been a huge project and something that, you know, the tool actually really helped guide us on.
Yeah, super cool. So I think about that moment that we had when we first met each other and to where we are now, and looking back on some of those really key achievements and those key moments. What were some of the outcomes that you're most proud of looking back from now to where you are? It's obvious we're still on a journey, right?
Yeah.
Does it feel midway? Does it feel 90%? But I think, I don't know, putting a stake in the ground, looking back, what were some of those outcomes that you're like, yeah, that was a game changer that we did when we did that?
Yeah. So, hey, early on, I think doing the waste audit, that was massive. All of a sudden you actually, you know, as we touched on before, you know the volume of materials coming in and out of your business. And I don't think it matters what industry you are in. You don't have to be in manufacturing to, you know, have this reliance on packaging. You'd be amazed at what is exposed in a waste audit. You know, even for us, it was understanding the organic waste from our cafeterias. That was massive. And people don't really have the appreciation for that because they put their stuff in the bin and then the bin gets emptied and you never see it again. It's not until you dump it all on the floor and go, wow, it's a lot of banana skins that shouldn't be going to landfill. You know, we could compost that. We could do other things with that. So waste audit was fantastic. Line in the sand. Recommend all businesses to do it. Whether you do it yourself or find a consultant is actually up to you. That was great. I think discovering the wool as an option was amazing because we had really tried and looked at quite a few different materials. You know, we went down the path of the alternate polystyrene with sort of the mushroom packaging. And I just don't think that innovation has come far enough yet, although fantastic for other industry. I guess as you start to explore these material streams, you actually, you know, days it can be really overwhelming when you know your volume, you know the impact that it's having and a negative impact, and the speed that you want things to change, and it doesn't always happen that quickly. But the flip side of that is having those moments of discovering what other people are doing. There is so much innovation in this packaging space, and that's really exciting. This gives you a lot of hope in that. And I think if more and more businesses can start to discover everybody that's doing great things, whether that's dealing with plastic waste or whatever it might be, essentially these other businesses, these other innovative material businesses, they become manufacturers in themselves. All manufacturers need volume for efficiency, right? So they need more of what you deem to be a waste material. So I just urge people to identify what your problem areas are and start to talk to people about, you know, what others are doing with that, which is not going to landfill. There's a lot in the space, and it's so exciting.
Now more than ever, businesses are being forced to rethink how they operate, and Circularity is here to help. We run workshops that bring your organisation, industry or community together.
You may wish to gain an introduction to the circular economy opportunity, have a masterclass on creative closed-loop systems for your materials, or think about how you can change behaviours, develop circular business models, or even explore potential impact territories for your brand. Our facilitators at Circularity design and deliver immersive experiences that defy convention and demand engagement.
You find the time and we will make the most of it. We build capability, unlock new value, and co-design an extraordinary future together. Reach out via our website, circularity.co.nz.
I remember, because we didn't do the waste audit straight away, we did a bit of discovery interviews with your team.
Yeah.
I remember we hosted a circular by design workshop with the management team, and we created like little books and we did a little ideation, and I remember all the books disappeared.
Yeah.
And I love seeing them show up on their office on their desks.
Yeah.
Right. And getting information about that.
I think that waste audit, when we briefed that in, and shout out to Sunshine Yates, who did that, who many listeners will know, the work of Sunshine, getting in there with her team. I remember when we briefed that in and we talked about the scale of it, and I had to include a map, a site map, in the brief so that Sunshine could get an idea of how big we were talking about, how many businesses, how many skip bins, what was the scale of it.
It was all day for a week. Every day for a week.
Yeah. And I was saying to you, Michaela, is there a hotel that we can stay at nearby, because the team are going to be there every day for a week? And we were, and getting in there. We had photographers there to capture and photograph the waste to support Sunshine, and because a lot of that volume needed to be done at a weight perspective, because there was just so much of it. And so we had a photographer on site, which was actually capturing what those things were to support the data.
And she'd be able to share the journey with our people as well. These are the efforts that we are going to. And also I think the imagery and the video and stuff that we did, Lou, back then was so great because, and sorry to interrupt you, but it was so great to be able to show people the scale of our problem. I'm the last one to go out and say we've figured it all out and we're great. We're not, but we're acknowledging that you can actually get there. And I think that transparency is so beautiful. So those photos are pretty horrific, but it's an eye-opener for people, right? It's like, oh, God, okay, we've got some work to do, but we've started that journey.
Yeah. And for me, one of the ahas in the audit was actually timber. So that, the timber being used, it's a very common material used to transport goods, right? And it's kind of a packaging material. I think it doesn't feel like it is classified as that, but I know in this industry it gets used as it. And how, when it's used around packaging to transport stuff and it holds nails, often there's no place for it to go afterwards because it doesn't warrant the labour cost to pull that out. So the volume of timber was one of the big ones for me. But I guess looking back, I came into this project with huge excitement. Like, obviously, when you kind of said, "We're like, let's have a chat," and I'm like, "Oh my, we've got some incredible opportunity here." And for me, I always wanted to put wool into your system right from the outset. I saw some of the challenges that were facing that industry, and obviously, wool packaging was bubbling along the surface globally. But something that I knew straight away was that we needed to prime your system for change. And I think that waste audit was one of those primers, get you to fall in love with the problem, get everyone to fall in love with the problem, and just how important that is in this work. I just wonder if you had any builds or reflections on that, priming your system for change.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, it's amazing, actually, because I really went from this moment of sort of feeling, though I was a bit of a hippie. That's what I got labelled as, this green warrior. And by the way, I would happily be a hippie any day. I love it. But, that's in a corporate world, and I love all our GMs, but we're a male orientated industry typically. And I sort of just got this like green stamp on my head, and I'm like, yeah, I want that green stamp on my head. But it was sort of, I was just, it was coming from a place of probably emotion, too much passion, like we've got to make change now, but no, probably lacking the structure and the plan and all of those things. So, as you said, that was that real kind of eye-opening moment to understand the scale of what we're dealing with, and it ignited having that proper plan in place, that proper structure. And now I've sort of got everybody is so involved and off really trying to find solutions and understanding. They've since done their own audits and their own businesses again, saw so much value in it that they're running their own and going, oh, actually there's other materials that have snuck into the system that we don't know, or, something that once upon a time we would have gone, well, there's nothing you can do with that. That has to go to landfill. I heard that quite often. That's no opportunity there. And all of a sudden going, oh, that random little piece of rubber, what could we do with that, Whereas, so that's been a really nice shift in the culture. And sometimes I feel like the rubbish lady, because I'll just walk around looking in bins all the time and understanding what materials were in the wrong places. But But we're getting there. I feel like we're getting there. That's actually the biggest, one of our biggest challenges is the sorting of materials. Even when we've found solutions for different materials, it's getting people to put things in the right places. And I respect massively everybody who is making such a big effort to do that, but it's the it's a small percentage of people that don't that actually ruin a really great system. So again, it comes back to that whole like behavioural change, mindset shift. So yeah, although the waste audit was really effective, it's still definitely taking time to sort the basics.
And you're talking about cultural change.
Yeah, it's huge.
So actually alongside of it, we introduced you to some friends. Yeah. Again, some more collaborators because cultural change ended up requiring a bit of a brand work around communicating your vision and your purpose, and then that starting to trickle down into behaviour change, right?
Exactly. Yeah, totally. And, yeah, consistent messaging for people, awareness, and making it really easy to have that kind of emotional connection with it, you know, talking about how if we make change now, the impact that it will have on our futures, future generations, you know, trying to make people understand that it's not all doom and gloom, and every little bit helps. And by taking the 2 extra seconds at the bin to, you know, not put your sandwich into the paper bin or something, that actually that can be really impactful. So I think people sometimes are just sort of a little bit casual about it, and it's how you make it not a casual thing, but not overwhelming. It's just that.
It's a fine line.
It's that fine line. But it always is a fine line with people, right? We're dealing with a really diverse group of people and thoughts.
Oh, my goodness, yeah. Michaela. I'm just sharing personally my trials and tribulations of it at home. Yeah. We had some edamame beans last night, and my family was convinced because it had chili salt on them that they weren't to go in the worm bin because the worms would like the chili and the salt. And I'm like, no, in the whole scheme of things, it'll be fine. And they were like, are you sure? And they were like standing there hovering over the bin with the edamame and chili and salt. I was like, we can do this, team. we can get it in the worm bin.
The coffee grinds will dilute it.
I know. But Sam, I want to pass over to you because I know you working in sustainability, there's a real connection with you in this work. And I know you've got a great question for Michaela.
Yeah, it was funny, Michaela, when you talked about having the green stamp. I remember, you know, when I first started as a sustainability advisor in a large organisation, one of the first, I guess, compliments I got was that I had sort of moved past their perception of me as being only a green hippie and, you know, being able to demonstrate understanding of the financial value and the other values. And so much of it, my reflection since then has been about increasing connections between people and to the opportunity for them as individuals or for their community or for the organisation and new ways we create value. And that connections between people just been so much at the heart of being able to change these systems and change behaviours and build capability. And that huge culture shift that you're really describing. And so I'm quite interested, to be honest, Michaela, on if you could kind of cast your mind back over the last few years, how you think this might have been different if you had have tried to go this alone and you hadn't had the opportunity to collaborate with partners externally and internally to try and deliver these shifts?
Oh, it just would have been so much slower, Sam. Really, like put quite simply, we just wouldn't be where we are now. The progress just wouldn't have been the same, and I may have run out of steam for it because it is overwhelming, you know? And yeah. I think I really feel for people who are in sustainability roles in businesses on their own. I really compare it to health and safety, right? When health and safety regulations and laws were brought into New Zealand, it was a really like, oh, what do we need this for? You know, that whole like, she'll be right. We've always done it this way and it's worked and we don't need change. And don't get me wrong, I don't love health and safety laws, but I think the point I'm trying to make is that now it's just part of everyday life, right? We've got health and safety reps in every single business. There'll be a health and safety manager in every single manufacturing business for sure. And the culture around how people respond to that is really favourable now. So that's where I want to see this responsibility space get to, or the sustainability space get to. And I think we can fast track that. You know, I think we can fast track the sustainability representative or the manager in the business that's trying to do this on their own or with a small group of really passionate people, it comes back down to that budget piece, right? Just you have to find budget within your business for this to make progress. And it's just, it's so important. So it's actually a call to action to particularly bigger businesses and medium-sized businesses to sort that out. You know, everyone's writing their budgets now for 2023. So really factor that in and boost it from what you've ever thought that you needed. And I know that there's a lot of uncertainty in the economy and we're at a little bit of a crossroads potentially for a lot of industry. We don't know what the future looks like, but leaving this off the budget because you think it's going to save your business is not the solution. You know, it's not the area to cut costs. So you have to keep resource on this to keep any form of a pace going.
Yeah. And like you recently had a conference with all your stakeholders and customers. How did it feel to be able to front foot this now in front of them, like at this moment in time?
We feel really proud, actually. And so do they. You know, they want these problems out of their businesses because they are problems. If we go back to the packaging piece, it all ends up on their sites to deal with. The desire is there for more reason than one. But I think that they're grateful that we are this invested in the journey and genuinely care. You know, we're not just doing this because we have to. We're doing this because we want to. And so they can then feel proud about that as well. And there's benefit for it. You know, we've been talking about our carbon zero certification that we're doing through Toitū and ThinkStep, and having the only carbon zero certified product range in the country that our fabricators have access to, then the conscious consumer, or all consumers hopefully, have access to, is massive. So I think, you know, people aren't taking this lightly. There's a lot of pride associated to being involved and then buying in and making the system work, you know, because they want to.
Mm. So I guess for businesses out there to pick up on your call to action, which is a good one, is you're either going to pay to play if you haven't done this work, or you can pay to redesign into that future and take those customers and stakeholders on that journey, because I think everyone's asking for it, right?
Yeah, and in your own time at this stage.
Well, yes, because otherwise you're going to be told what to do. Like we saw, obviously, the emission reduction plan has an entire chapter dedicated to circular economy and the bioeconomy. And we're thrilled that MB is working on their circular economy strategy for government and for New Zealand businesses and the makeup that we have here across both small businesses, medium and large. So we look forward to continuing to share these shifts that we've been on in a journey with you, Michaela. And credit to you. I think that moment back there in the room with the whiteboard and mapping the system, I think you can be very proud around where you've landed. We often like to ask a question at the end here. So we've got two questions left. First one's for you, and then Sam's going to ask the second one, which is for us.
Oh, cool.
So this question is if you could inspire other change makers or maybe other sustainability managers or that are in these roles out there to give them one piece of advice, what would you want them to know? What do you wish you'd known much earlier?
Well, it's tricky because I guess when it got to the time when I needed to know what to do, the opportunity was put in front of me. So I think perseverance is so key. Don't give up. Keep talking to other people. Keep going to events. You know, you talk to some people who are in this role because they're really passionate about it, but they're not necessarily super outgoing people, where they'd go to a networking event and walk up to someone and share their problem. But I think, you know, there's a lot of networks out there, whether it's the Sustainable Business Network or the Sustainable Business Council, that you can join and you can hear other people's stories, right? So you can be inspired without having to be super outgoing and forward. And then, you know, flick people an email who have got up there and confidently shared their problem, I think is really key. I think understanding the role that technology has to play in the space for your business is quite important. It's actually a little bit of a tug and war bit with technology, because technology is fantastic and, like we've talked about, measuring connecting people as well, connecting people's problems. One person's problem is maybe somebody else's solution. I think there's a lot of opportunity there, but then it's also around balancing the role that technology's played in getting us to where we are now, because it's really created this society where we need convenience, we need instant gratification. We've got that real, I want to buy something online at the click of a button and I want it there in a few days. So that really challenges the whole supply and demand, you know, push for businesses. If the demand's there, a business is going to supply, right? Mm. And sometimes that urgency to supply means that things aren't always done best practice. Mm. So if you're one of those businesses, it's I think it's really good to involve as many people as you can across the group to understand how you can solve some of those behaviour changes, particularly if you're a supplier of retail goods or something. You know, how can we really need to manage people's expectations that we've built into society with technology. So I don't know, that would be another thing as well, and that was something that I'd wish I'd known, is dealing first with human behaviour and our customers' behaviour as well. Ordering behaviour is a really interesting one. You know, I spoke about cases sitting outside potentially for a month or 6 weeks. Why are you ordering that far ahead? You know, that's a whole podcast in itself or a whole conversation in itself. But yeah, maybe that's my answer, as I've just spoken out loud for a long time. Just
well, in speaking out loud for a long time, Michaela, is actually one of your truths that you work to, which is you share openly and widely. And I think as partnerships, you know, as a partnership together, and this journey we're going on to share the work and share the journey, you know, we wrote an article in Newsroom together. And at that point, you know, that was 7 months ago. And we went, it's here now. This is where we're at now.
Yeah.
This is where we're going. Mm. And I think that openly sharing is another piece that I think I see you doing, which is awesome.
Mm. Yeah. Cool. Thanks.
Sam, we've got the last question.
I just wanted to support what Lou said quickly, Michaela. I really feel that what makes you a change maker and what should inspire other change makers who are listening to this really is just the boldness at which you approach challenges and really looking for the opportunity to redesign all of the impacts out and create a system that works and enables your communities locally, but also our communities across Aotearoa to thrive. And I think that's really at the heart of the way that you've approached each of these challenges that allows you to keep learning and then allows you to keep sharing and supporting your team, which is a really important balance for us as we make this shift. But it's my pleasure to ask the last question of the podcast, which is where we flip the Q&A and ask if you have any questions for Louise and I.
Yeah, I'm going to go back to the technology piece that I just spoke about. So how do you think we can positively influence people's, I'll call them convenience habits. That example I just gave of, you know, we want everything now and we want new all the time. You know, we want the next thing. We've created that speed in society. You know, it's everything. It's transport. You know, in New Zealand, we struggle with public transport, right? Because it's just so much easier and quicker to get into our car and get to where we need to be. So I think that it's a very broad topic, but that holistic approach to human behaviour and habits, I think technology has been a big problem in influencing that or speeding that up. But how can technology be the solution to essentially slowing things down back to a maintainable pace for humans, because essentially it impacts mental health, it impacts the way we, you know, use products, work with products, the way we eat, the way we buy clothing, you know, how we operate in our homes with our families. Is there something in that technology piece that can help us, not hinder us?
Oh my goodness, yes. Okay. I mean, I did my Masters of Technological Futures. That's how circularity was born. I drew the logo on a napkin and held it up and said, this is what I want to do. And I came at it from technology. Mm. So I'm always really interested in that intersection of technology and kind of nature, the man-made world, the natural world, how do those two interplay?
The ecosystem.
And the ecosystem, because essentially the technology systems that we've built are networks, and that's what nature's based on. So how do we harness those networks for good? how do we use that technology to fill some of those gaps that we can't answer because we're human beings, because we've got behaviour in there. Mm. And we are going to, when we're thirsty, we are going to want to drink.
From right. a plastic pump bottle.
literally, we can't stop it. It's like a driving urge, and you know, we'll turn into maniacs if that that urge or that survival thing kicks in, right? And I guess it's a big topic, and one I definitely want to unlock for Aotearoa. I want to engage with our technology companies. I was really excited to see Vodafone rebrand because I keep prodding them to go, when are we going to get Fairphones into the country? Come on, Vodafone, bring those in. Why are you selling us all those other phones? Fairphones are going to enable us to have a reusable, repairable phone for every consumer. We don't have those in New Zealand. They've got them in Europe, right? They're at scale. So, you know, call out to the technology companies. But just my personal kind of anecdote experience around behaviour is I went online the other day and I did some shopping. Now, I do shopping online and I send them to my cart and I walk away. It's just a thing. And I think we all do it and I very rarely buy it. But this one time that I went in, it stopped me because I went through the cart and at the bottom of the cart, it asked me to touch a button that said, send to Aerobe. Now, for listeners, if you haven't heard about Aerobe, Aerobe is the ability to create a digital wardrobe for the things that you've purchased and call them back into circulation. So if I purchased these garments and clicked Aerobe, they would have a record of my purchase, when, what they were, how much I paid. And if there was a consumer out there while I owned them that wanted them and wanted to make an offer to them, they could. Right. And that ability of technology being able to and no digital piece went on my garment. Right.
It
was all in the network.
It's real.
Yeah. My garment, I didn't have to carry around like a Bluetooth reader on it. Right.
It's tangible.
Or have like a full RFID tag hanging off my neck. But that then digitized what I owned. And that then opened up other human behaviours to then have that person, when they were searching for that garment, to not purchase it full price, to create another life out of it and keep that going, right? And that, for me, that seamless integration of those kind of platforms with very robust data, which enabled me to feel better about my purchase because the emissions were recorded or the materiality of that was recorded, that's the game changer for me. Yeah.
Preventing that end of life always once it's in the system.
But I burbled for a bit. I'm interested in what you had to say, Sam. What's you asked the question, now you're answering it.
Yeah, I love that question, Michaela. So, you know, how do we shift these behaviours and what's the role of technology in that? And for me, it made me reflect on a panel discussion I facilitated recently at Festival for the Future on what is the future of food. And when I posed a similar question to Dr. Jessica Hutchings, who is working and doing really transformational work in food systems in Aotearoa, she said it starts with aroha. And for me, that's just so true. It starts with the love that we have to what we have. And it links back to your first response to what the radical redesign of everything means. It means loving what we have and then finding ways that we can repair and reuse and share and care for and maintain what we already have so that we continue to value it and we break that extraction cycle. And then the role of technology for me in that is supporting our behaviours as part of that system. So supporting us to repair or to reuse, to share, to care for our materials, to care for our products. And that's true for every single industry. Every industry needs ways, and technology can be a role in that to identify what we already have, to track where it is, to enable us to understand how do we recover it or where might we recover that material from or where do we return it to be repaired. Or sometimes it's even simpler than that. How do we repair it ourselves? You know, so how can we make it easier for me as an individual? I recently had the experience on the weekend of my portable speaker broke and I had no idea what it or where to take it or how to repair it.
They just die. It drives me nuts, those things.
Yeah. And where can you go? And there's no way that I'm putting that just in my landfill bin. So technology has such an important role to play in making that easier for us because I think the risk that we have is that we have these really complex systems and technology can make it simpler for us. So it should be simple. It should just say on the bottom, you know, it could be a QR code that I scan and it tells me the local recovery shop, or it tells me what's likely wrong with it and things that I could do to test to fix that piece or that part. So that's, for me, really, it's around, it starts with aroha, it starts with loving what we have, loving what's already around us, and then creating ways and technology playing its part and helping us to show that love to those products, to those materials, and to the resources that we have around us, so that we can spend less time consuming new things and more time enjoying the things that we already have, but also enjoying the nature and environment around us, which is also at the heart of all of this, really.
Yeah, it's like the product stewardship piece, isn't it?
Definitely.
Yeah, and where does the responsibility end? That speak is such an interesting one, because say we did have the QR code that says take it to this place. It's the problem that manufacturers of electronic goods in particular, they don't build things anymore to be able to repair them necessarily, so that you go and buy another one. So that's a bit of a pushback to manufacturers, isn't it?
Definitely. Yeah. And why the law is changing in Europe. Totally, the right to repair movement is massive there. So nothing new can be produced that can't be repaired.
Yeah.
It has to be able to do that.
Yeah, it's great.
Shout out to a couple of businesses that are working in the space. We have our friends at Lion, which are on their journey, and they've just launched with Again and Again the ability to go get coffee at Havana without using a single-use disposable cup or one that's not going to be composted. And they're running a returnable coffee cups scheme, which is going to be really cool. So please check that out at Havana. If you're down in Wellington, I think that's a cool brand down there. Started down there, which is really cool. But the time has come.
Yes.
To say farewell.
Thank you.
Thank you, Michaela. Thank you so much for obviously all the work that we've done together. It's been an absolute pleasure the last couple of years. It's been amazing having you on the Redesign of Everything podcast. It's been cool to really deep dive on some of these big, gnarly problems. You have not been afraid at anything we have suggested. Which is really good. Which has meant we've been able to leap through these big challenges, I think, and move through them, like you say, at pace. And I can't wait to see where this journey ends up. And
I'm always
thrilled at every new thing that we are able to reconnect on as this journey goes forward.
Yeah. Cool. Thanks so much, Lou. Thanks, Sam.
Yeah, thank you. It's been a pleasure to be here with you both.
Friends, thank you so much for joining us today, and a big thank you to our guest and our fantastic team producing The Redesign of Everything. For more information about circularity, the work that we do, and how we can help your organisation, head to circularity.co.nz or find us on our social media channels listed in the show notes. Please subscribe to the podcast and leave a review on whatever platform you are listening on. And until next time, let's redesign everything. This podcast is proudly brought to you by Circularity, a team of passionate circular strategists working with a new breed of businesses.
They don't see today's challenges as someone else's problem or the solutions as a utopian vision.
Simply put, that is why we're here, to help build capability, unlock new value, and co-design an extraordinary future together.
If you are wanting to level up your impact and are looking for a partner to support that journey, consider our advisory services. Get in touch via our website, circularity.co.nz.